हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 21. In his Govinda Bhasya commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan explains, at the time of cosmic devastation, the three modes of nature become subtle and unmanifested. This is called tama, the unborn root of matter. At the time of cosmic creation, the modes of nature manifest a great variety of names and forms, beginning with pradan and avyakta. In this way, forms of red and other colors are manifested. In the Shruti Shastra, it is said, at the time of cosmic devastation, the Mahatattva merges into the Avyakta. The Avyakta merges into the Akshara, and the Akshara merges into Tama. In the Isha Upanishad Mantra 11, it is said, only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. In the Shankhya Karika, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in these words, Mula Prakritir Avikritir Mahat. The root of matter does not change. From that root, seven transformations, beginning with Mahatattva, are manifested. From them, 16 transformations are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the root of matter and its various transformations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead tells the demigod Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.34, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, it is without, if it is relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Right? Because why of what we value? Because what we value is what we see. So if you see something and don't relate it to the Lord, then you're dealing with illusion. You see it and you connect it to the Lord, now you're dealing with reality. In the Sandilya, in Sandilya's Bhakti Sutra 3186, it is said, Kach Chaktir Maya Adha Samanyat. This potency of the Lord is called Maya, for it is material by nature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, this material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Right, because that's the whole difficulty here is, what are they trying to do by all this? Right? All these philosophies, they're giving the opinion of how everything's coming from Maya and all that, but what's the purpose? Right? They want to be able to cross over it. So here then Krishna is saying that if you surrender to him, then it's very easy to cross. Otherwise, by these other systems, it'll be very difficult to cross. In the Kannada Sutra, 4th Adhyaya, 2nd Ahnika, wow, it is said, Sad akarana van nityam. Reality is eternal. It was not created by anyone. In the Vaisheshika Sutra, it is said, Nira Vayam Vam Dravyam Avadhi Saeva Paramanu. The atom is the smallest unit of matter. It can never be divided. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:11-2, Sri Maitreya declares, the material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is individual and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an indivisible entity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they say in their own forms, without forming different bodies, they are called unlimited oneness. There are certainly different bodies and physical forms, but the atoms themselves form the complete manifestation. And so everything's coming from the atoms, right? So the atoms are always eternally there. They're not divisible. And so, but the point is why are they even manifesting? Why are they able to take on these different forms and all that? That's because of the Lord's potency. Otherwise, atoms can't do that on their own. Like that. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-9, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, all such philosophies spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. Here someone may protest. This potency creates the material world independently, without the help of anyone else. Why must you postulate the existence of a supreme God? To answer this protest, the author of the sutras speaks these words. Jaratvat kriti shunya chaitana prerita bhavati samgyatvat vat. Matter, being unconscious, cannot act by itself. When activated by consciousness, spirit, it begins to work. Matter is naturally inert, for it is neither alive nor conscious. It has no power to perform any action. When conscious life pushes it into action, matter appears to become warm with life. It is under these conditions that matter appears to act, becoming the creator of the universe. That is the meaning. Right? So it is the creator, but because of the supreme spirit that's there and because of the desire of the living entities. Okay. This is described in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and is producing all moving and non-unmoving beings. In the Aitareya Upanishad 1:1:1, it is said, Saikshata Imal Lokan Asrija Asri Jata. With a glance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead okay. Here's this Imal in Imal Lokan. That's technically one of those Yeah, I don't know the word. Okay. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:14, with a glance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead created the material worlds. In Bhagavad Gita 15:14, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. I am the fire of digestion in every living body, and I am the air of life, outgoing and incoming, by which I digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-19, Lord Kapila explains, Daivat Shubhita. After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates the material nature with his internal potency, material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Hiranyamaya. This takes place in material nature, when she is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls. Right, so the conditioned souls have particular situations to be in, therefore those situations are manifest. Right? Mm-hmm. So since there's unlimited souls, then there's always scope for everything within the 14 worlds to be manifest. But even if it's not manifest in one universe, it'll be manifest in another. And then all those souls that are supposed to be in that situation, they'll end up in that universe, in that situation. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That means, Maharaj, the 8 million 4,000 species are not necessarily that they should manifest in this universe.
So 8 million will be there, but just say that there's that particular rock at that just right angle, just with the sun, that's just at this right thing, and just blocked by that tree that you can't quite get here, so then they'll move you to another universe where it's going on. Okay. Right, because there's also a frog that has to be in that same situation, so he's under there along with you as a blade of grass. So it works out. However, the Shankyacharyas explain, Prakriti Kartri Purushastu Pushkara Palasha Van Nirlepa. It is the material nature that acts. The Supreme Personality of Godhead remains aloof, like a lotus leaf untouched by water. Right? So it's correct, but they don't understand it's through his energy. So they're just taking it that the material energy acts on its own without the Lord, but it's still with his sanction, his glance, his energy. Then it becomes transformed. Does that make sense? So they're only taking part of it that matches what means something to them. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-17, Lord Kapila explains, My dear mother, O daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, the time factor, as I have explained, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom the creation begins as a result of the agitation of the neutral, unmanifested nature. In the Markandeya Purana, Devi Mahatmya, Brahma tells Prakriti, Twayaiva Dharyate Saravam. You maintain everyone. You create the universe. You protect it. It enters you at the end. Right? It enters the Prakriti, but then Prakriti enters the Lord. Right? Tattva Sutra 21 and 22.
Yes. There is a connection between time and Prakriti.
Means time is how Prakriti transforms, because you can't transform unless there's time.
Yes.
Right? So, when Prakriti is already there, Pradhan, so that, what was he saying here? The neutral, unmanifested nature. And so, when the Lord glances, then in that glance goes the jivas, time, and false ego.
Yes.
Right? Then, that agitation, then it will transform into avyakta, from that into mahatattva, from that then you get the, you know, individual universes.
Yes. So the opponent, they don't accept time? What is their...
They'll think time, they'll think everything's created by Pradhan.
Right.
Yeah, so the jivas, time, illusion, like you see, is they don't know that there's illusion before the beginning of creation. They only know the illusion, the false ego that comes after.
Yes. Yes.
Right? You know, when you're talking about the eight elements, then false ego is that first. But the point is why would false ego then transform? There has to be something as a catalyst. So that's that bigger form of false ego, that original. And how can it transform unless there's time? Because without movement, you can't transform something.
Yes.
Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:9-21. The demigods said, The three worlds are created by the five elements, namely ether, air, fire, water, and earth, which are controlled by various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. Being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates. The time factor himself, however, is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let us now worship that Supreme Lord who alone can give us full protection. Right? So it all goes back to the Lord. That's the whole thing, is that everything is happening because of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sutra 224. Vya tireka nava sthites cha napek shatvat. Jatireka, in the absence of anything else. Anavastite, because of the non-existence. Cha, and also. Anapekshatvat, because of the independence. You cannot say that Pradhan alone is the cause of its changes, just because there was no cause except Pradhan existing before creation, because Pradhan is independent. Sutta Prakashika. Here in the Sutrakar points out the major flaw in the Shankya philosophy, claiming Pradhan to be independent. This is not possible, since then they violate their own theory of the jiva's proximity with Pradhan in the matter of creation, and the notion of superimposition, hence the proposition is refuted. Right? Means they're saying that Pradhan just is sitting there, and the jiva is there, but by proximity, then the material energy takes on that qualities of the jiva, which is consciousness. And then being conscious, now it independently starts to act.
Yes.
Right? But the problem is the independence means they don't require the jiva. Right? So if they're saying that Pradhan is independent, it doesn't require the jiva to produce creation. Right, but they're saying no, it's because of the proximity and therefore superimposition.
Right. Hmm. So we agree with that. They say Pradhan is unconscious?
Yes.
We agree on that?
Yes.
Okay, so they say that without the jiva or the living force, nothing can happen.
That's what they're saying by proximity.
Yeah,
that therefore it takes on that quality, and then on its own independently it creates. But what would be the purpose and motive and everything? Why would that happen? What's the point? And at the same time, is if they're saying that it's actually independent in creation, then why do they require the proximity of the jiva and superimposition to make the whole thing start working? Because if it's independent, Pradhan, it can function on its own without the contact of the jiva. Does that make sense? So they're defeating their own philosophy. But, you know, it's just the acharyas are pointing it out. Siddhanta. The word cha means moreover. Just because there was no other cause, anavastitehe, before creation, except for Pradhan, vyatireka, because of its independence, anapekshatvat. You cannot conclude that Pradhan caused its own transformation. You say that except for Pradhan itself, there is no instigator or inhibitor before the creation. But there is dependence even there, for you accept another cause, the proximity of the conscious Purusha, jiva. Thus, the theory of insentient Pradhan being the sole creator of the universe is defeated. Moreover, without any other cause, and with the continued proximity of the jiva during destruction of the universe, creation should arise even at that time, right? So unless you're separating the jiva from the universe at the time of destruction. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it's there, so therefore then, why is there not creation when it's so-called destruction?
That means creation should be eternal.
Yes, yes, it should always be going on. One cannot say that creation does not take place at that time, because the karmas of the jiva are not active, since even at that time those karmas could be aroused.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the karmas are already there in the jiva, that inclination is already there, and therefore then the material nature is producing based on that. Right, So it means Pradhan can't be independent, because why would it create in a particular way unless it's fulfilling the karmic needs of the jiva? So it's fulfilling the karmic needs of the jiva. It has to have the proximity of the jiva. You know, and even if it's there, since that proximity is there, why is there destruction? Because the proximity is there, there should be creation. Right? Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to say, no, but it, you know, one happens here, one happens there, but why would it? What's the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless there's some purpose. Yes.
We saw previously that it was said
confused. That the Lord is independent, and they said that he's cruel because he could have saved Jesus from all this stuff, but he has to do it according to their karma. And now,
this is the whole point. You just keep changing. It's like this. Let us say just someone has a strong identity, right? And so, you know, just for discussion's sake, let's call this strong identity false ego. Okay? Yeah, only for the discussion. Now, if there's a point where they're discussing with someone else about right or wrong, and so this person with this, you know, alleged false ego says it's one way and someone else says it's another. So, what is more important? Being, being logical or winning the argument? Yeah, so that's what's going on with these guys. It's just that their intelligence is such that they can express their false ego through much more subtle aspects.
No, the same guys.
The same guys. That's why you see here we're just starting with Siddhanta. Because we're just continuing other angles of the same discussion. Because in one sutra, you're defeating one thing, and then the next one in this. The sutras also, you have your main sutras, you have your supporting sutras. There's some detail of that, I can't remember. I think in Jiva Goswami explains in the Harinamamrita Vyakarana, I think there's six kinds of sutras. And so, depending on the kind of sutra that's there, then the sutrakar here is just giving another reason, just like you see in Sanatana Goswami in his purports, he'll give an answer to the point. Then he'll say, or, you could look at it this way, and then that, or, this way. And sometimes he'll give 3, 4, 5 different ways of looking. So all it is that the presentation's been there, and then it's being defeated in this way. It could also be defeated in this way, and then from this way, and then like that. So you're just making sure that there's nothing left. Bhagavatam verse reference 6.4.32. There are two parties, namely the theists and the atheists. The theist who accepts the supersoul finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga. The Shankyite, however, who merely analyzes the material elements, comes to a conclusion of impersonalism and does not accept a supreme cause, whether Bhagavan, Paramatma, or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous external activities of material nature. Ultimately, however, both parties demonstrate the absolute truth because, although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. Right? One is trying to prove that it is the supreme. The other is trying to prove it's not the supreme. Right? Like that. So it's always about the supreme. Because that's why you notice here, theist. And then the other party is known as not a theist. They don't have a separate name.
Yes.
You understand? Yes. That's the whole point. Yes. They're just lacking theism, that's all. Yes. So it's not actually its own standing. They're both approaching the same supreme Brahman, to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. Footnote 6. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the theist and the atheist advance in their approach to the Supreme Absolute Truth as either personal or impersonal, respectively. Their subject matter, however, aims at the same object with seemingly opposing statements. These statements are true since the Absolute Truth encompasses both. So, yes, then quote, why do you criticize the knowers of Scripture? They argue because there are different opinions stated in scriptures. That is not so. Both Bhakti Yoga and Jnana, Shankya, perceive the same Brahman, Brihat, without disagreement. In studying these two different scriptures, there is no disagreement. They seem to have contrary ideas concerning what exists and what does not exist. In the Bhakti scriptures, the object of worship is described as a person with dark complexion, with yellow cloth, lotus eyes, four arms, holding a bow, club, and other weapons. He has forms, qualities, limbs, associates, and abodes. In the Jnana scriptures, the object of attainment has no name, form, qualities, hands, feet, eyes, ears. It alone exists. But there's no contradiction in these two different objects with different qualities. They both exist within one Brahman. Both processes have Brahman as their object of perception. Quote, but how can there be no contradiction or disagreement? End quote. The particular qualities of each realization arise from fixing one's faith in the same real object. The form with qualities promoted in bhakti scriptures is a real form, not a false object. The form without qualities promoted in jnana scriptures is a real form. The names and forms of the Lord, such as Krishna and Rama described in the bhakti scriptures, are not forbidden in the jnana scriptures, even though a person may be fixed in that particular realization of Brahman. Only the material forms are rejected. The bhakti scriptures also do not worship the universal form, which is also forbidden in the jnana scriptures. Right, so we understand, we know, we have the knowledge of, but we're not worshippers of. So those who are worshippers of, then they'll go to Brahma Loka. Right? Meditation on this form is The wise do not accept these two forms of the Lord described by me, since they are composed of matter. Meditation on this form is recommended only for some persons in the initial state for purification of heart, and not for all types of worship. Thus, the bhakti and jnana scriptures are not contradictory. Those who argue over differences in scripture, not knowing the real conclusion, are condemned. Sardartha Darshani 6.4.32. Right, so, what's the point behind it, the principle behind it? The difficulty comes up is that if we're talking about liberation, the process of liberation is the same. The difference is that having attained liberation, the Vaishnavas will continue on in their devotion to the Lord. Right? And they obtain this liberation more easily because of worshipping the Lord in detachment. While the Jnani, with great difficulty, attains liberation. Because they're having to do their work that would naturally be for themselves, but without an attachment to the results. That makes it much more difficult. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, the point is the process is the same. So there's no contradiction. It's only the conclusion that you see that there's a problem. So the lack of understanding conclusion, that's where it comes in. But what the scripture is talking about, there's no contradiction.
This is a real Jnani. He's wanting to know the truth.
The real Jnani meaning the devotee?
No. Yeah, when you say Bhakta and Jnani.
Here we're meaning those who are following the impersonal path.
That means being atheist or being Ramavadi, I can say.
It means Mayavadis don't really count. They're atheists because they're technically just Buddhists that use the Vedic literatures to support their philosophy. Right? Because the idea is then, since they accept the religion and not the philosophy, then you have common ground to discuss. And then through the proper etiquettes and association and discussion, then you could establish the proper philosophical understanding. Right? So that's the advantage for them. As a Buddhist, then it's two different things. They're not necessarily... You don't have as much in common. Right? So... you're trying to establish the position of the Lord. And someone doesn't have faith in the Lord, they only understand the impersonal. So technically that makes them not a theist, because it's the Lord who's doing these things. Though it's a feature of his.
Yes.
So they'll say they don't believe in the form, but actually they're believing in an aspect of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a common point.
Yes.
It's just that they don't know so much. You know, it's just like, let's say someone's in sixth grade in math,
mm-hmm.
and someone is doing a PhD in math.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the sixth grader's math is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just that it only goes that far. Right?
Yes.
So they're trying to say, because the stuff that they do and the stuff that the more advanced are doing seem to be different, that they're pointing out those differences. Just like in sixth grade, if you're doing mathematical equations, you're going to use, you know, 0 through 9. Right? You're not going to have any E's. You're not going to have, you know, how you say, lazy eights.
Yes.
There's so many things you're not going to have.
Yes.
All these letters and that, what's that got to do with anything?
Yes.
So then they'll point out it's different, and there's no they're not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we see is that the Acharyas can go all the way through. They see everything all connected to Krishna, so there is no contradiction in anything anywhere. It's just that you're only seeing a certain amount of the Absolute Truth. But everyone's worshipping the Absolute Truth. There isn't anything else to worship. Right? To say that there's something else, then that means you don't understand the actual creation.
Does
that make sense? So that's why the Acharyas can work with these things so comfortably. Yeah?
Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita chapter, by Sankhya one is finding the root of the tree, and by devotional service one is watering the root of the tree.
Yes, very nice. Yeah. So in other words, Sankhya has its purpose. It's so that we can understand what is the Absolute. But then, once that's there, then you take up devotion. Just like yoga, it's meant to be able to meditate on the Super Soul. Once you're fixed in that, then you take up devotion. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You know, you regulate your life so that you're always performing appropriate activities, but then those activities are supposed to be dedicated to the Lord. Right? You study the philosophy, and through that philosophical understanding, you understand the Absolute Truth. Therefore, now you should surrender to the Lord. So all these different schools are actually meant as to surrender to the Lord, just that they don't. That's why we call them by a different philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? Sutra 2.2.5, Purva Paksha. Right? So now, Siddhanta's been said, now they'll come up with it. Creepers, grass, and buds turn into milk spontaneously. Okay. Without another cause. Pradhan changes into Mahatattva and other elements without another cause also. Right. So you're not really thinking this through. Because notice that it's just, where's the cow in this discussion, right? Anyatra bhavaschana trina divat. Anyatra, elsewhere, abhavat, because of the absence, cha, and only. Na, not, trina adi vat, or trina adi vat, like grass, etc. Grass transforming naturally into milk is not a sound argument, since milk will not be produced in other circumstances. Right? Only when the cow chews on it, it becomes milk. Right? Even this greatly exalted, you know, how you say, Shankyite, if he chews on these creepers, grass, or buds, you don't get milk. Right? Sutta Prakashika. Here in the Sutrakar refutes the opponent's viewpoint, which is in itself a weak argument. Grass does not transform into milk by itself, nor under all circumstances, but only in a few situations. The dependency factor is a conscious being and the desire of the Lord. Right? And so Krishna's made cows like that, that they can chew on grass and produce milk. Horses chew on grass, and it doesn't really, they're not famous for it. Though, unless you're in Kazakhstan, then it is the preferred milk. Yes. But we won't go into that. Sri Govinda Basya. Siddhanta. The word cha is for emphasis. This is not a reasonable argument either, for the transformation does not take place in other circumstances. anyatra bhavat. Such as if a bull eats grass, the grass does not turn into milk. If grass turns to milk by itself, grass which falls in the yard would turn into milk. Right? So it'd be great. You know, you go out, you know, how you say, you know, you go for breakfast, there's no milk in the fridge, you go out, mow the lawn, put it all into the bucket like that, take it back into the house, and then, you know, maybe you need to sift it or something and pour it into your bowl, and you're good. For
vegans,
yes, yeah, grass milk, grass milk, perfect. But that does not happen. Therefore, grass transforms not because of its own nature, but because of contact with a particular being, the cow. The will of the Lord then makes the transformation happen. Right? So, as super soul, then he sanctions that his desire. It happens. He wants it to be that way. Cows produce milk. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.85, 6-8. Whatever potencies the life, air, and other elements of universal creation exhibit are actually all personal energies of the Supreme Lord. For both life and matter are subordinate to Him and dependent on Him, and also different from one another. Because you say it's all one, but they're different. They're different from the Lord, but at the same time, as they all depend upon Him, they're all extensions of His energy, so they're all non-different, but you can tell the difference. Thus, everything active in the material world is set into motion by the Supreme Lord. The glow of the moon, the brilliance of fire, the radiance of the sun, the twinkling of the stars, the flash of lightning, the permanence of mountains, and the aroma and sustaining power of the earth. All these are actually you. My Lord, you are water, and also its taste, and its capacities to quench thirst and sustain life. Right, so Krishna says he gives the main ones. You drink because, you know, the taste that you'll get. But it also, it quenches the thirst, sustains life, you know, it can clean, it can do so many things. You exhibit your potencies through the manifestations of the air as bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, physical strength, endeavor, and movement. So all these different things are there. So in the chapters in Gita where it describes the universal form, he's only giving the major ones. Right? The strength of the strong. But what about bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, endeavor, and movement? Right? So it doesn't mention those there. It just takes the main ones. And even here, you're taking wide enough to see the application, but it'll do more.
Yes.
Right. Sutta 226. Abhyu pagame pyartha bhavata. Abhi upa game pi. Even if it be accepted, artha, purpose, abhavat, because of the absence. Even if it is accepted that pradhan can initiate creation on its own, the proposal does not stand, since pradhan would have no purpose in creating the universe. Right? Why would be the reason why pradhan would do that? Because if it's dead matter, it's unconscious, it's only picked up consciousness because of superimposition. That means, then, what would be the reason?
Right?
Does that make sense? And as we said before, it can't be something from the jiva. Right? Sutta Prakashika. Herein the Sutrakar refutes the opponents who declare pradhan to be compassionate. Since they're, yeah, the Lord's cruel, pradhan's compassionate. There's no objective since jiva before creation was conscious. Hence, there isn't a need to enjoy the prakriti. And also since the jiva before creation was liberated, why should the creation take place in the first place, right? Means jiva's already conscious before creation. Creation is there, what's the need to enjoy it? Because the jiva's already liberated, so what's the whole point of this whole exercise? Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta. The word not, should be supplied in this and the next three sutras. You claim that Pradhan acts for the enjoyment and liberation of the jiva by thinking in the following manner. The jiva, having enjoyed me and consequently realizing my faults, will attain liberation in the form of detachment from me. Pradhana, pravriti, pararta, svatopi, abho, kritva, ushnra, kunkuma, vahanavad. Pradhan's action as agent is for the sake of another. Spontaneously, because Pradhan is not an enjoyer, like a camel's carrying a load of kunkuma for the sake of another, its master. Shankya Sutra 358. The jiva is not the agent, but the enjoyer. Akartur api phalo pabhogo hogon nadyavat. The jiva is just like a person who eats rice, though he does not cook it. Sankhya Sutra 1.105. Yes. This activity cannot be accepted. Why? Because in accepting it, there is absence of purpose. Artha bhavat. Right? Why would they cook? Why would the jiva would eat? Right? Because then But if you're liberated, then you see things as they are. So if there's faults, you would already see that in the liberated state. Right? So then, because if that's the state you can go back to and remain liberated. Right? So then, why would that not already be there? Then, what's the purpose in cooking this rice? And what's the purpose in eating it? You know what I'm saying? What is trying to be accomplished? That's the difficulty that comes up, is that why would all this go on? They say it's okay, so that having enjoyed and consequent relays may fall, so attain liberation, the form of detachment. They were already liberated before.
Maharaj, our process is that from bondage we go to liberation, and theirs is completely opposite, like from liberation to bondage. That's what
they're saying. Yeah, well, that's why they stay here.
Yeah,
because the thing is, you go from liberation to bondage because you just want to know. But the point is that if we're taking it that the position of liberation is Vishuddha Sattva, then why wouldn't you already know? Right? Now you can say, no, but the jivas in the, in between creations that are in that Vishuddha Sattva state also. But as soon as the creation is there, then they come into the universe. That's because they're conditioned. They have the desire to control and enjoy. So where does that come from? Why is that? So this, they can't explain those things. So what's the purpose? They want to be the controller and enjoyer. So even in the liberated state, they can't remain there. As soon as the opportunity to do something is there, then they'll come back. While they're taking it, no, you'll get there and everything will be perfect forever. But why would it be? What's the purpose? What's the purpose of liberation? What's the purpose? They can't say. They're saying, okay, having enjoyed the material energy, then you go back to liberation. But what's the purpose of liberation? What's the purpose of going there? Why would being there you come here and then go back and then you'd remain? Right? Because if there's no purpose, then there's still going to be the possibility of coming here again. And if that's there, then what's the whole point of all this? How is this a benefit? Yes?
They say that the creation has no purpose.
Oh, they're saying here so that you become liberated. But the whole point is, why does Pradhan need to do that? Why does material energy need to do that?
They don't say that this is the means.
The means, but the means to what?
Do they claim that jiva is liberated from the beginning? They don't address this point.
They would have to be, because they have to be there and existing before the creation. So it's by their association, then Pradhan takes on the qualities of the jiva, therefore that consciousness then they take on and produce.
And then liberation would mean what?
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. What would it mean? Because if you're already liberated, and then you want to know about what it's like to be conditioned, so then how is their position of knowledge, the ultimate position? It doesn't make sense. That's the whole point. But as we said, because there's attachment, then it doesn't have to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, let us say someone's on a diet. Okay? And so then there's a particular system of what you should eat. Right? Now, do you always follow that diet?
You should.
You should. But the point is why should you?
To get an effect.
Yes, so there's some benefits from it.
Mm-hmm.
But we see is that someone may eat something outside of the diet. Why? So that's the whole point, is it doesn't depend upon logic. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that's what you want. How is it logical? So in a sense. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that all these philosophers, because of material desire, then they come up with these philosophies. It gets done what they want, but only up to that point of what they want. So though it goes past that, they don't care about that. Yes. But that's the whole point. They're all of them are lame. Yeah, yeah. So by that's the idea, is that you start to see what is lame and what's not. It's only when lame is connected to Krishna, then it becomes useful. Right? So that's the thing, what Pungo Lam Gayate Jirim. Then the lame becomes, you know, can do something.
Even the argument that they give about proximity to Krishna and the they say that it is because of Adhyas, because of the imposition of proximity that they exchange the qualities. But they are so smart that they choose only those qualities which they want to prove their philosophy, not all the qualities are imposed on each other.
Yeah, means they're only interested in those qualities that support their philosophy.
Yes.
You know, that, you know, the soul can also be a rat bag. They're not, you know, that one's not going over to Pradhan, because Pradhan is, what do you call it? Compassionate.
Yeah.
You know, that one seems to go to the Supreme Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that, yeah. So it's all just according to their desire. But under the modes of nature, then they will have a particular interest, and so they'll create a philosophy that matches that. And then other people in that, with those same, you know, compatible modes, then they'll be attracted by that philosophy, and then they'll follow. Because it's something that you like. It doesn't have to be why. It doesn't have to be a reason. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone, you know, say we have fruit. Someone likes a particular fruit. But why? There is no reason. Means below this, you see, it becomes very, very technical. So you can see the logic, you can see all that. It's just that when it gets up to this point, it falls apart. So, therefore, we'll talk at this level, which is above what most of these philosophers can talk at anyway, because they have no definitions for these things. Means you understand this, you could go and deal with any philosopher or any scientist, and they can't, they don't have anything beyond that. All they have is their attachment and their emotional reactions and their anger to being, you know, shown that maybe what they're thinking is not correct. You know, does that make sense? You know, so it's like they're well respected in the world community of you know, materialistic scientists, and then somebody comes along and shows how they're wrong. That's not going to go down well. Right? So they're just going to get angry and this and that. You know, it's just like I was saying something the other day to someone who is working in the academic world about, I don't even remember the two names, I only remember Svoboda, but there's another one who works with him. They're both PhDs. And that, but they became interested in the, you know, the Vedic knowledge and all that. So they became interested, they've written books. I think one focuses more on Ayurveda and those kind of things, the medical, the other one, I'm not exactly sure, but whatever. They both know these kind of things. They went to, I think, that famous Ayurvedic school in Maharashtra. It's Sanskrit medium. So they go there, they learn Sanskrit, they take part, they graduate, and all this. So they're quite, you know, quite smart. So then I mentioned about how they go on, they produce their books, they do all these things. And that the answer was, but in the community they're not accepted, so then why should we deal with them? But the point is, well, why aren't they accepted? That won't be discussed. It's just, oh, they're not accepted, and then you're supposed to drop it. You know, because I was making the point that Dhritakarma and Sataputta, they just did their own thing. And they were well respected amongst thoughtful people. They were considered amongst all the, you know, kind of intellectual and, you know, the those who didn't identify as academics, but who were more intellectual, or it's a field that's not theirs. You know, the intellectual field, the more, you know, like, say, New Agey or things like that. They were considered the authority in, like, the western half of America. So if anything was on that subject matter, they'd always invite them to conferences and this and that. But in the academic circle, then they won't have a good standing. So the point is, as I was pointing out, but Svoboda, and that they also do the same thing, and they're very renowned. But then the whole point was, is that, no, but they're rejected. But the question is why they're rejected, or what's so important about the people in the academy that no one even knows they exist, and that they say it's good? Well, if it's for the benefit you're preaching to the general public, they accept it, then why isn't that a good thing? But that can't be answered. That won't be discussed. It only creates anger. So that's the point, is you're dealing with the emotional stand, because they are a living entity that's, you know, endowed with false ego, and they want to be the controller and enjoyer. And so if you go oppose what they're doing, then they just become angry. It's angry after frustration. Right, because they don't want to know. Otherwise, you have someone like Prakashananda Saraswati. He wants to know, and also so far, all he's found is the impersonal path. But when he comes in contact with Lord Chaitanya and hears the actual reality, then he moves on in his understanding. But the others, then they become angry because it's an identity. For him, it was a process, right, to get to something. But others, it's the identity, and that's how they are. They're academics. They identify as academics. That's their authority and the position and their social standing and why they get a paycheck every week and all these kinds of stuff. But you break that down, then it breaks down in their eye who they are, rather than we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that in these, then that's why you try to keep it up as high as possible. Because if you go, no, but they're this, that, then you just argue over these things. But you go, but why? Why aren't they? You know? What's the point? Knowledge is knowledge. If knowledge is truth, why should you discriminate? If you're actually a seeker of truth, then you want to know what the absolute is. Right? You know, so like that. And as devotees, we accept the Veda. So why would we reject somebody on a materialist, you know, measurement when you know they're quoting from the Veda? And so why wouldn't that be correct? Why wouldn't we accept that? Because it's just a matter of volume, you know, like that. Because they're worried about volume. So if the common person likes, that's volume. Is that, yeah. So the more you keep it above and just drop down to, get like the Acharya does, get their point, and then go back up. Then, mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Can we use the same, because a few pages before it was said about karma, about jnana and bhakti, means there is something in common, Brahman can say.
It's all in common.
Can we say that between the Vedic science and modern science, there is also something in common?
Means they're all studying the Supreme Lord and the laws of the Lord. Yes. Just the difference is that one will say it's the laws of nature because they're Shankyites.
Yes.
The other will say it's the laws of the Lord.
Yes.
You know, manifest as the laws of nature.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. So that's why technically there is no, this whole concept that there's a difference between religion and science. Science is the study of the laws of nature.
Yes.
So laws are religion.
Yes.
So all it is that science accepts the religion of nature, but not the religion of the origin of nature.
Yes. Yes.
That's all. So,
yes.
So from that way, it's common. Then those who have no philosophy or have no religion, and then they have to create, then they'll say it's different. And so then one is about the creator, will not deal with the created.
Yes.
And the one will deal with the created and not with the creator. And so that's how the argument has been established.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you see, in the Vedic form, you don't have this kind of difference. It's how far they want to take. So both are accepting the creation. It's just now, do they accept the creator also?
Yes.
Right? But it's always presented that, no, we're the logical ones. We accept the reality of the creation, while these others are an illusion. You know. But we're saying, no, the laws of nature, why are there laws? If it's by chance, which they say, you can't say it's a law. Because if it's by chance, it just maybe happens to be now, but tomorrow it could change, because it's all by chance. So that it's stable, it's steady, they can even build their scientific theories on it, means it's not by chance. It's law. And you don't get law by accident. You get law because there's consciousness. There's intelligence. Right?
But we can also, I see actually that there are mainly two ways to deal. Means to argue, to defeat, and also to make friends.
You can make friends, but you have to make sure that you're making friends, you're not becoming one of them.
Yes, yes.
Because that's the whole point, is otherwise, you know, like someone sent me a video of, I may be wrong here, I can't remember if it was, I think it was Harvard, that one of the schools in Harvard, that 50 years ago, that Srila Prabhupada had come there and given a lecture. So they were having a little program, you know, with some devotees, you know, from the academic field and that, and some of the academics that are favorable and, you know, like this and that, kind of remembering Prabhupada and this and that and all that. And so it was very interesting is that the devotees were busy being friends with the academics like that, really talking and animated and all kinds of stuff like that. You could tell they were trying to impress them just by the bodily language. And the funny part is one of the senior most, I think it was Hopkins, I think.
Yes.
Then he was making the point is that he said from the very beginning to the devotees, you know, back from the, you know, whenever they first came in contact, I don't know if it was 60s or the 70s,
yes,
that you're representing an ancient tradition. You should represent that. Don't try to become modern. So that's the fun part. We're sitting there trying to become one of them, and then the leader of them is saying, why don't you represent your own tradition? You know what I'm saying? There's a word for it. You know the word? They worked in the third camp. You have somebody who's in one group and tries to pretend like they're in the other group, and neither group liked them. Like that. I think everybody kind of has names for them. They're not nice names, so that's why we can't use some of the names. Does that make sense? So one has to be very careful of that.
Yes.
One is being friendly. They like the devotees. They like the character of the devotees, but the devotees are presenting themselves as devotees. And that they're in another tradition. They're intellectuals. They study. They like to analyze. They like to discuss. And these are the common points. And so discussing up to these different points, that's fine. But just it should be known that we go take it further. They only want to discuss this much. That's fine. But what if what's beyond that? Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful in that in being friends, you don't not deal with what you're doing. If you are, then you're just socializing and all that, and that's nice. And if the idea is by socializing they like you, then they may be more favorable, fine. But don't call it soft preaching. Just call it socializing. You know what I'm saying? Because preaching means you're delivering the knowledge of the absolute truth in a way that they understand. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if it's your committed thing that all you can do with them is socialize, and then they're nice, they'll take some prasad, you know, and maybe in the background you can have some devotees doing some kirtan, you know, some nice melodies, and, you know, very musically kind of refined. And so they'll appreciate it because of just their nature towards, you know, some culture of that. And in this way they're engaged, and that's all you can do, then that's fine. But then the weakness is them, not us. You understand? The weakness is the scientists can't tolerate more than that. That's why we only do this much. But when you say it's no, this direct preaching and all that, that's not good, and only this soft preaching is real, now we're dealing with a lack of faith. We're not dealing with what goes on. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur invited all the big, you know, how you say, British leaders and officials to a program there that was catered. He fed them non-vegetarian food. But he sat at the table and discussed philosophy. So he wanted to make them comfortable. But he discussed direct philosophy. We won't do that. Oh, no, but that vegetarian, this and that, because we value vegetarian, because if you were a hippie before, you had to be a vegetarian. You can't be a meat eater and be a hippie. It doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You're like, you can't be a, you know, you can't be a Hell's Angel and ride a bicycle. It's just, they just don't work. You have to have a Harley, right? Does that make sense? Can't be a Honda, can't be, it has to be a Harley, right? So you have to be a vegetarian. And so that was already accepted before joining, and so therefore it's part of the identity, therefore then, you know, like that. So we can't do that. You know what I'm saying? But the point is no, they're doing it. But you see, what Prabhupada's living at what's his name's house? The Agarwal's house. Right? Then he's just living there because he has no place. He goes out, does his preaching, but at the house he's just there. He's just an Indian gentleman and behaves as such. Right? Whatever facilities he gets, he's doing. Right, they're keeping his vegetables in the refrigerator with all their stuff, you know, the non-veg stuff. So, you know, but it's working. He's just doing. But it's just he's getting by. But he's not calling it. Well, you know, we don't do coffee. We just do the soft. You understand? It's a mentality. Is that you're preaching to the audience that's there? If they can handle more philosophy, you would give it. They can't, you give less. How much they can handle. But the point is when someone says soft preaching, if it's an opportunity that you could be direct, they won't be. By their own rules. So it's not that it's actually what's being practical. Does that make sense? So that means, let's say you're discussing with that group of scientists, you know, because at some point you have to stand around and schmooze, and maybe they bring around snacks and drinks, but, and you always have to do it standing, I guess, because if you're sitting, you might get stuck. Okay, that's why they stand. Because you can keep moving. Right? Because if you sit, then how do you get up? How do you excuse yourself? But you just stand. Everyone stands. And only if you really want to talk to the guy, then you can sit down. Right. So you move around, and if somebody just is not interested in these things, you just be pleasant and nice. You know, ask, oh, what's their discipline? What are they doing? Well, you know, any ladies' publications. You just be nice because they can't handle more. Ask if they want some more prasad, or how do they like the samosas, or, you know, whatever it is. So, like that. But then someone else who is interested, you would talk more. So that's the point. It's preaching is you have the absolute truth to give, and it's just a matter of which field of knowledge and activities and results that they're comfortable discussing that in, and then how far are they willing to take it? Can they take it all the way to Bhagavan, or only to Paramatma, or only to Brahman? So that's then the preaching. And different individuals, that will be different. So even in the same room of scientists, as we saw, that one scientist has way more faith in our religious process than those devotees that were there at that program. And he says he's been saying this since the beginning. So he's been saying this for the last, 40, 50 years. And that group of devotees will not take it. They just don't. They always think, no, you have to dress like them, act like them, Listen. Yeah. Point is, no, you don't. Does that make sense? So if you have somebody that, is dressed differently just because that'll please them, but it still doesn't mean that you don't discuss our things. And if it's you have to dress like them, eat like them, do everything like them, and not discuss the philosophy, why are we wasting our time then? Because at the same time, how much influence do these people have anyway? Really? Not really that much. The YouTube has much more influence than all these other things. Facebook, much more influence. Previously, yes, they were quite prominent. But then, previously, that they're willing to discuss so many things. It's just part of culture. So then why would you waste your time there? Does that make sense? Not so much.
Not fully.
Not fully, yes.
I have seen actually personally in the scientific preaching there are many devotees have some idea. Very few are really qualified.
That's there, but point is they should be studying this. Then they can know how to talk to them.
Yes.
But the point is it's either you're talking just direct devotional service and then the direct activities of sadhana bhakti as we practice from the Pancharatra, it's either that or nothing. So then that's a problem. Prabhupada gave this philosophy. He gave the studies. We don't do it. It should be you want to discuss with them. They're a doctor in their area. Then someone should at least be a Bhaktivedanta, Bhaktisarvabhauma in our own philosophy.
Yes.
And then you would be able to talk there. But no, that's not it. And so instead, someone who's good at the scientific, then they're giving Bhagavatam class when it shouldn't be like that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And not only that, they're good in that field, but they oppose our system. A prominent physicist, devotee physicist, who's been a leader in this kind of academic preaching, he's opposed to our system of parampara. Like that. He's not even technically our sampradaya.
Yes.
He's an upper sampradaya.
Yes.
But he's the prominent one representing us. And how is that?
Yes.
Or Prabhupada as a god brother, I think it was it Dr. Sanyal? Like that. I think it's Sanyal. I think he said that up to 1933, up to as long as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was present, then his writings are spot on. But anything after that, it's not, because they get influenced by the Babaji's, by this, by that, whatever they feel like. So the whole, there's standards. Why is it he's so prominent? Why is he even giving a class? Why is he representing? Now, if he wants to be a guy that's favorable to ISKCON, but in the academic world, great. But why would he be representing us when he doesn't even accept our system of we saw that these liberated souls are saying, if you don't accept the spiritual master in this way, then you're not, how can you be connected? And he doesn't. And so therefore, and he even preaches it. So,
yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is that many become like that. They oppose what's going on in society, and many of them have this academic background. There's the one on academic from the East Coast, there's the academic in the West Coast, and they all come up with their own philosophies and theories and oppose what's going on, what Prabhupada's established. So, how is that beneficial? You know what I'm saying? But, now if somebody can appreciate, knows the philosophy, and is comfortable working with the academics, because they're a particular headspace. You have to be comfortable with their culture and their etiquette and how, they say something when you can say, you have to wait. You can't butt in like that. because it's more with them, it's more about the journey than it is about the actual getting to a destination. So to be able to do that means you have to be very cultured, but you also have to be very intelligent to work out how to present our philosophy, which you see Bhaktivinoda Thakura was doing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, Srila Prabhupada, all the acharyas. I mean, so when it comes up to these technical points, it's not even saying it in the verse and they're bringing it out in the purport. So they can work on this platform. So then if where someone wants to work, learn this, and then you can go in and say something very nice and keep it on a scientific level. Like that. Because when it comes to it, means if they see that you're just trying to discuss the absolute truth, it's not about defeating them, it's about discussing the absolute truth, and they're open. Because they don't know what is time, they don't know what is space, they have zero definitions. And their whole philosophy is based on it, but they have no definitions. So they'll discuss it. Like that. You know, they'll discuss these things. They don't mind discussing at this point. It'll broaden their view. So even if in the academic world they can't use it, as a person, an individual, then they can take up the process of devotional service. But you have to know, you have to be a scientist like them. Just where real, we know the real Shankya. They know the, we know the theistic Shankya, they know the atheistic. But the point is, the Shankya is Shankya. It's just, what is your purpose? So then if you have that culture, you have the refinement, you have the intelligence, then it's a great field to preach in. Otherwise, why would Prabhupada make an institution specifically to do that? And he took, you know, very intelligent people to be involved with that. But you have to be very careful that just being nice isn't enough. You have to be nice because you're culture. But it's not that being nice is the preaching thing. No, that's because you're a gentleman. You're a Vaishnava. You are nice. Then it's a matter of preaching beyond that.
But this means that all devotees must know the philosophy quite deeply.
They have to, but then that's what they should be studying.
Yes.
And I have not seen that that's what's going on.
Yes.
Even if they study, it's on their own. It's not in the association with devotees. So, point is if you know the Shankya nicely, then you can discuss in those. Because what are they presenting? You can see is in going through the Vedanta Sutra, a lot of time has been spent with Shankya philosophy. Like that. So that means if you want to know how to deal with all the problems they have, then you have to know this. But you can't know it, you can only know it by studying it from the acharyas. These are acharyas.
Yes. Right? In the association of devotees.
Yeah, in the association of devotees. So then it makes that you have something very powerful. And then with the same thing, not only scientists, but also academics you can speak to, and because we have this wide range of things, because the culture, you understand the cultural aspects, the wide range of the Vedic literatures, then you can talk to all the other intellectuals. They of course, they've gone to school, they have degrees, but they don't really identify with that. They'll be new agey, they'll be professionals, they'll be these kind of, like that. So all these areas are weak because we don't know our philosophy and culture. Like that. You know, and then we're arguing, no, we're you know, from this country, so we can't do all that Indian stuff. We're not talking about doing Indian stuff. We're talking about being a culture. Right? In the Vedic culture, Brahminical culture, you don't get a higher culture than Brahminical culture. And so, therefore, we're talking about being cultured and knowing the philosophy. So, then, why wouldn't you be able to discuss there? Because otherwise, if you're not from that background, you won't be able to function in that background. You know? Does that make sense? Because, like I said, by conditioning, those people say, well, we're, you know, Westerners and all that, and we can't relate to all these other things. By my conditioning, I would consider them extremely low-class, uncultured people. I think that one of the terms used is Philistines, or, how you say, Cretans, you know, like this. It's just, somehow or another, this is the people that have been known for always making trouble. I mean, there's plenty others who make trouble, but somehow or another they get the rap in the Western European scene. We would classify them like that because why wouldn't you be interested? You would want to get the experience. There's an opportunity for getting an Indian experience. You'd take it. you'd even pay money to get in and be able to. Because you know, it costs things. They have to rent halls. It costs things for arranging the programs, for all the food and that. You want to experience it. You would be there. You'd be paying money. These guys are getting it for free and rejecting it. So in the conditioning I grew up in, these are very uncultured people. And you just avoid them like the plague. If you bumped into them, you'd be pleasant and nice and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you would never on any day of the week be willing to spend time with them. It's just you wouldn't. They're just uncultured. And then they're trying to say this is going to be the one, this is going to be the angle to preach to these intellectual, professional, all this kind of thing. It's like, it's so far from the truth. It's like, it's laughable. And the common person who doesn't come from the cultured background or the intellectual thinks it's great. So that's the point, is that the Vedic dealing, when we're dealing with conditioning, even on the Vedic, is so superior to anything that's there that an Indian gentleman can function anywhere in the world. Prabhupada's the perfect example. He could go anywhere, meet with them, because a gentleman's a gentleman. They may have different ways to express it, but they're a gentleman. You know, it's just like if you're a Bengali gentleman, if you eat, you're going to get rice. You know, a Punjabi gentleman, you're going to get chapatis. You know, it's just, that's the way it works. But the point is gentleman is a common category. So it's not just a Indian thing, it's a Vedic thing. And therefore it permeates all society and all in the whole world. Therefore, if you act like a gentleman, people will respond as one. And if they don't, why are you dealing with them? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Because if you use common culture, that changes so quickly that, you know, within 6 months, whatever language you're using is outdated and you're stupid. Whatever you're wearing, whatever, like this. So unless you're cutting the profile and creating the whole thing, and how long can you do that? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and then you're gone. You know? So the whole point is, but gentlemen, that's here to stay. It's always been there. It's here now. You know, and you can say, oh no, but people aren't into this. Just like seeing a thing on suits. There's this whole kind of thing going on in the West is suits are out. You know, like that. And the fun part is yeah, and certain the corporates have taken it like that. And they're trying to do and fit in like that. But it's interesting that there's a whole new wave of young, professional, educated people that they like the suits just because of the, you know, the, how organized it is and how good it looks and all that. So they're bringing it back. And all the older people who are trying to fit in with the younger people that it's out, they're saying it's out, but these younger people are taking it that it's in. So the new rebellious way to dress is to wear a suit. You know, like that. You show up in a suit and you outdo everyone else in there trying to be different. You know, so that's what I'm saying is that when you deal on this lower level, it's changing so much. Why would you bother? But being a gentleman, that always remains. So you behave properly. And so it's not that that is a form of preaching. I mean, it does aid the preaching. It's a secondary aspect. But that is how you're going to behave anyway. So now you go into the situation, you're acting as a gentleman, then you look for preaching opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now if there is, you preach. And if there isn't, then you've been nice and they'll think you're a nice guy anyway. But you can't say that being a nice guy is preaching. No, that's how we're supposed to behave. Because if that's preaching, then if you're not preaching, then we're going to act like just, you know, in an uncultured way. No, we're supposed to be gentlemen all the time. You know, I mean, that's what we're trying to get to. I'm not saying that we are, but I'm just saying that's what we're trying to get to as far as culture, as far as religion goes. But then we have our philosophy. So you're going to show the philosophy if there's an opportunity. So if someone's very narrow-minded, then you can't show much. You just, whatever they're interested to talk, you can talk about that. But if they're more inquisitive, more, you know, wanting to know, more interested, then you can start to bring up stuff in areas where they have that interest in language and examples that they would appreciate. Right? You're talking to a scientist, you do scientific. You're talking to artists, you do the artistic things. You're like this. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that hard preaching means you don't actually know you don't really know the philosophy or the culture. You know part of it, and that's it. So then it's not broad enough. So that same preaching to certain people makes tons of devotees, hence Prabhupada's disciples. So many of them. Like that. But if you go into other areas, it doesn't attract their attention. Right? Like that. So then, but then at the same time, as to throw all that out and just say, we'll try to be nice by whose standards? So then, unless you were a gentleman before you became a devotee, there's a good chance that you're not being one now. And so then you'll still only attract and deal with a certain group. But if you're actually a gentleman based on the Vedic and Vaishnava principles, that's attractive to any group. And then you see the opportunity, if you can give Krishna consciousness, how to give it that they'll appreciate it, that's preaching. So there's no such thing as hard or soft. It's a matter, it depends on the person you're dealing with. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Like if I'm sitting down at a meal, then I can put things on a plate, things can be wet and messy and fine. If I'm out and I'm going to be eating, you know, traveling in a car or a train, things have to be dry. You know, so it's not hard food and soft food, you know, so therefore, you know, does that make sense? It's what fits the situation. That's it. So there's preaching. That's what we said. There's no such thing as hard preaching, soft preaching. There's preaching. And then behaving like a gentleman. So if you're behaving like a gentleman, that takes care of whatever they're worried about in the soft preaching. Right? And then, if you speak about the philosophy according to the person, then that's preaching. That accommodates the soft, it gets done what the hard guys want to do. So it accomplishes everything. So this whole, dichotomy? It's between two different schools like that. You have hard and soft. It doesn't exist. It's a figment of people's imagination. It's conditioning. People do it like this, but the point is that that's not what preaching is. Right? Prabhupada didn't do that. So, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, learn our philosophy, learn our culture. And what cultured person wouldn't like to come to a place that's all set up nicely, like a high-class Indian scene, you know, the rugs, the big huge pillows, the incense, the nice pictures, the nice music, people dressed nicely, nice fine food and all these things, and being served in a nice way, you know, in that kind of, it's an experience. People pay money to go to places and get that. If you go to a Lebanese place to eat and all that, and they'll give you that one huge, you know, thing that everybody eats out of, and it's sitting on a little table that you sit on the floor. Right, you go to the Chinese place, you get chopsticks. You know, so it's just how it works. Right? And if you go like that to the French place, they won't let you in. Right? You know, so the point is everything has its cultural norm. So going to that, why wouldn't people be interested in that? But we're thinking, no, it has to be Western. And then that Western will be, you know, kind of middle class Western. And then why will that attract the intellectuals? Oh, you live middle class like I do, so I want to do what you do. No, they're already doing that. We're different. We're all offering an alternative. Does that make sense?
We are different, but we need to learn more.
We have to learn more. We have to learn more. That's why Prabhupada wanted the devotees to learn these things. So a second initiated devotee is supposed to be Bhakti Shastri. Yeah, and then like the preachers and that, the preachers, you know, leaders, they're supposed to be Bhakti Vaibhavs. Yeah. Gurus, GVC, they're supposed to be Bhakti Vedantas.
Yeah.
Like that. So it's just like that. That's the, how you say, entrance degree for that level.
Yes.
Like
yes.
That. So we'll talk anything else that's secondary, but we won't talk the primary.
Yes.
As understanding our own philosophy and tradition. Because we don't understand it, so if somebody brings it up, oh yeah, it's not right. Oh, we should get rid of this in the preaching. No one can understand this. No, why not teach people? We're an educational institution. Is that, okay?
Yes.
That clears the...
Yes.
Okay, now we're okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.